5S, kind of crucial. I think, as you probably read in the book, there's some great examples of poor 5S practices on job sites. And I can tell you from 30 years of experience going to construction job sites that if I run into a job site that has a lot of house cleaning or housekeeping issues, almost guarantee you that they're quality issues. I almost guarantee you they're safety issues. And I almost guarantee you that the schedule is, the project is behind schedule. It's a very good indicator. And it's not a surprise for any of us lean practitioners that, you know, 5S is a really good indicator of getting to normal conditions and then defining what's abnormal. You know, you can't figure out what's going on if everything's a mess, right?
Hi, everyone. I'm Tracy O'Rourke.
And I'm Elizabeth Swan.
And we are from GoLeanSixSigma.com. And you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast, where we wrestle with tough questions, talk to thought leaders, discuss great books with authors, and get insights from Lean Six Sigma practitioners.
We let you in on helpful apps, we bring you the news, and we challenge the status quo so you can build your problem-solving muscles.
And did you know that the cafe has been open for 3 years now?
Yeah, but let people know that we do go home occasionally.
Yeah, once in a while, but it is fun to hang here with you, Elizabeth.
Feelings mutual, Tracy.
So, Elizabeth, tell our listeners what's on the lineup today.
Glad to, Tracy. Today's special is the highlight, and that's your interview with David Umstadt, who wrote the Lean Playbook for the construction industry. For an appetizer, we'll continue our series about charting, graphing, and statistical software and by discussing Minitab, the Cadillac of stats packages. For in the news, we're going to discuss an article about Google's top two programmers and their secret to being two of the world's best problem solvers. And for the printed page, we'll discuss David Umstadt's book, Lean Project Delivery, Building Championship Project Teams. It's a great day at the cafe, Tracy.
Remember to stay tuned for this month's coupon code in order to get a discount on GoLeanSixSigma.com online training.
Let's get to the appetizer. Time to revisit the stats Cadillac, Minitab, right, Tracy?
Yes. So Minitab used to be the go-to when we started out working with teams at GE back in the 90s, but it's been around a long time and is still a strong contender in the software market for Lean Six Sigma. And here's what I and some of our Go Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belts, Craig Tickle and Bill Eureka, have to say about Minitab. Some of the pros, first of all, are that it's easy to use. It has a very easy interface. It's written from an everyday user perspective, not necessarily a statistician's view, so that's very helpful. You don't have to be a black belt to use it. There's lots of tools that are beneficial to the beginning process improvement professional, but it does include intermediate and advanced statistical level tools as well. It's developed by people that are very knowledgeable in statistical theory. The calculations are verifiable and statistically accurate, which is helpful. It's constantly being updated to improve their product. So they have something now called the Companion, which is tools and reporting that includes building dashboards for your Lean Six Sigma efforts, including KPIs. And you can create graphs and get it updated. So it's very interesting. It's a nice add, I think. Also, there's some statistical analysis, advice, and guidance and help materials, including a quality trainer, which is online tutorials and webinars. So if you have access to it and you don't remember how to run a one-way ANOVA, you can watch a tutorial really quickly and run the chart or run the tool, which is great. I've also discovered that there are YouTube videos available. They have their own YouTube channel, which is cool. And there's macro capability to facilitate steps that are repeated on a monthly basis. So that's really cool. So those are some of the pros. Some of the cons still are that it's still kind of expensive. It's $14.95 for a one-time user license. It does include a lot of capability, but you can rent it, and they also have student rates too. So that I think they're at least making an attempt to make it more affordable, because it is a challenge, especially if you're a student learning. It could be a big barrier in terms of pricing. Also, the capability of the software may exceed the needs of the user. So that could be a challenge. You're spending more money than you really need. They do offer concurrent user strategies, though, for organizations sharing resources to aid in reducing some of those costs. So the bad news, though, is it's not available still for Mac users, only for PCs. I think you're going to talk a little bit about what they are trying to do for Mac users, but right now, you can't really get it on a Mac. So it does require users to pass information in a compatible format. Minitab users for 16 cannot open files in Minitab 17 format unless the Minitab user designates it to be saved in a proper format.
I trained green belts and black belts on how to use Minitab way back at GE and again with Starwood Hotels. So a lot of clients early on were using Minitab. It was like the tool. But now I've been a Mac user like you for a bunch of years, so I had to switch to other software. But this is my perspective, both from the past and I sort of checked in on what's happening now. I always liked the aesthetics. I love the look of the charts. They always felt super sharp. I can tell a Minitab chart from any other software package. It just has nicer lines and nicer natural colors. I think you can add color to other people's charts some, but this one sort of automatically out of the box looks better. I always liked their Pareto. It was a true Pareto. This is where I'm a bit of a geek, but I hate when people truncate the y-axis to be at the top bar. The whole point of the Pareto was that the y-axis was as big as all the bars stacked on top of each other, and the cum line, you know, went up increasingly from that top bar. So I don't like it when they sort of condense the whole thing. It's easy to cut and paste into Excel, but confusing because it's not Excel, which Excel works in columns, and Minitab works in columns, but the rows are meaningless, and that's hard. For someone's really used to Excel, you expect you can go across as well as up and down. There's a learning curve. A lot of the things we've talked about are add-ons to Excel, but this is a whole new software package, and you have to learn it. Priciest, you've touched on that. They do have a light version that works on the Mac, and it's called Minitab Express, and it goes for that you can rent it or, you know, license it. That's $49.99 a year. That's way more reasonable. But when it first came out, I thought, okay, maybe this is the answer. You know, I can recommend this to clients because, you know, I was so used to Minitab. But it had no Pareto chart. And that is one of the best visuals for root cause analysis. You know, we often push our people doing the work to like, well, let's do a Pareto. Let's see what your biggest issue is. So I just checked and it's still missing. So it's been years. And clearly they still don't think it's worth putting in there. But anyway, that's, I think, a pretty in-depth take on Minitab, the Cadillac. I'm Elizabeth Swan, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. Up next, it's in the news.
So this article is about programmers as problem solvers, right, Elizabeth?
Yeah. This is an article that was in a recent New Yorker magazine, and it's titled The Friendship That Made Google Huge, and it's by James Summers. And these two guys, Jeff Dean and Sanjay Gemawat, are the very top programmers at Google. They are at level 11. And what's interesting about level 11 is there's only two people in it. It's these guys. Right. So they've been at Google since 1999, so way back. And they were different from all the other engineers because they preferred to write code jointly. And for people who have not seen that, that means they're using a single keyboard. So one of them is entering information, entering code, and both of them are talking. And the article covered their amazing innovations and their continued success working jointly after all these years. So their early work provided a breakthrough in search speed for Google without the need for tons of expensive hardware. It was a very big breakthrough. It really allowed Google to go leaps and bounds over any other search engine. They also built something called MapReduce, and this is another kind of efficiency move, and that was so powerful. There's white papers written about it. There's different versions all over the place. It's used by LinkedIn, Facebook, Netflix, you know, pretty much anyone with a big catalog to manage. And it's a breakthrough for managing data. So these are two groundbreaking guys. They have changed the course of what happens on the internet. But it got me thinking about this idea of working in pairs. You know, John Lennon and Paul McCartney are great examples. It allows people to not, you know, people don't generally fall in ruts at the same time. You know, you might be hitting a wall, but your partner might be inspired. And Sanjay said, I don't know why more people don't do it. And I thought, more people do it, right? Tracy, you and I toured Menlo. We saw software developers all coding in pairs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Very unusual for that industry.
Totally. And, you know, some of their clients that felt like, well, that's totally inefficient. You know, some clients balk. They're like, we're paying double. Why can't one programmer get this done? But they are super successful. Their projects, unlike, you know, a lot of other software developers, they go, you know, on budget, on time, and with zero bugs. They have an incredibly robust process. And they make it a rule that they have to switch every week, and they have to switch projects so they learn faster. They have, you know, amazing flexibility. This idea of pairs is not new. And the article pointed out that the pairs had to be well-suited. But, you know, you and I got the impression at Menlo that it led to more connection, more getting along. You know, the fact that they were constantly repaired, get to know each other, right?
Right. Well, I actually think that the hiring process at Menlo also sort of vetted people out that couldn't do that, because you had to be nice to people. It was the kindergarten behavior, right, that they were looking for in those interviews, to make sure that people played nice. So I think that's interesting too.
I forgot they interview in pairs. Those guys have to work together and they watch how the pairs work, right?
Yes. And if you pulled the pencil out of the other person's hand, you were not asked back.
Yeah. So that was fascinating. So I reached out to Richard Sheraton, the CEO of Menlo Innovations, and he also read the article, because I wanted to know, did you see that they're saying nobody works in pairs? And by the way, he reminded me he's got a new book out, which means he's going to come back to our podcast and talk again. He wrote Joy Incorporated. He is a fabulous, fabulous CEO, great guy, awesome author. So we'll have him back. But his point was, you basically have two minds working on a problem, and ideas fly thicker. They move faster. Plus, and you and I do this, a partner can sniff out things that won't work, right? You can say, oh, I got this great idea, blah, blah, and everyone's like, okay, well, that sounds good, this part, but what about this part? That's going to fail. You're like, oh, right, I hadn't thought of that. So you've got someone automatically both encouraging you, but also guiding you, like, well, that, I don't think that would work. And this in the article, which I think is a fun fact, in the past 35 years, about half of the Nobel Prizes in physiology or medicine have gone to scientific partnerships. These are not solo. Yeah, not solo operators. So, and I just mentioned it, but Tracy, you and I have great success developing together. We're often, and sometimes it's two of us typing in because we're on, you know, Google Docs, but it's, you know, we're in the process of updating Greenbelt, and those have been some nice sessions where we really say, okay, this part, let's do it together. And we're on there and we're thinking as a team. And that I really appreciate.
Me too. I think it's really worked well. I think the fact that they say, you know, there has to be, the pair has to work. And I feel like we are a great
pair.
Different
experiences. We bring different stuff to the table and we challenge each other, which, you know, we're completely happy to do after all these years. And it's a great way to problem solve, because we have to do that a lot, right? There's issues we're confronting, and it's like, well, how do you resolve that? And I think that having those two brains.
Absolutely. Yeah. So having someone to brainstorm with, collaborate with, test our thinking behind, it results in a better product. We wrote a book together. We review blogs. We review book reviews. We work on projects. We update our courses. It's awesome. So I love the pair thing, but I might hate it with somebody else, but I love it with you, Elizabeth.
Well, I will take that as a huge compliment, but I also want to say to listeners, think about that. Think about problem solving in pairs, and think about when you're addressing process improvement and what you can gain by thinking through some of the barriers with somebody else, that you have all these great advantages of you're stuck, but the other person may not be, and you've got two very different brains and they're going to come up with something very different. So keep that in mind as you approach problems in the process world.
I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. In a short while, we'll get to hear my interview with Dave Umstadt, the co-author of Lean Project Delivery. But first, it's the printed page.
This book opened my eyes to the clear need for a separate lean approach for the construction industry, Tracy.
Yes, absolutely. When I first became a consultant, I was working with several residential construction companies in making the processes more efficient. From ordering house options, like a homeowner you know, they want to order flooring or tile and cabinets, and how do we reduce errors in that process, and how do we actually make the deadlines, to all the way to reducing defects in window installations, which is a horrible thing if you find that out. You typically will have a class action suit, because if one house has defective windows installed, all of the houses probably have it. So there's a lot of opportunity to apply process improvement in those processes. So I can really appreciate Dave's book, Lean Project Delivery. He introduces some key concepts in the, and their application in the construction industry, like how they apply 5S, how they're implementing visual workplace, how you're using fishbone diagrams and root cause analyses, and applying lean to things that are very industry specific, like BIM, building information modeling, and the last planner, which is a specific concept in the construction industry. So he has a very good, a nice breadth of examples of how these things are working in the construction industry. And I think, very inspirational. He also describes a pretty compelling case about why this industry really needs lean from safety and profitability and efficiency perspective. So I can really appreciate that. And ultimately, we talked about people dying on the construction, in construction. And nobody should ever have to worry about going to work and thinking that they might die. So that's really unfortunate. So if you are in the construction industry and applying lean or thinking about applying lean, this book is for you. I would pick it up and I would read it.
Yeah. Well, you've got that very specific construction background, Tracy. So I think you come from a very close understanding, a very big understanding of exactly why this book was so needed. But for me, just thinking on a personal level, looking at this industry, it's got all these distinct businesses coming together and trying to work as one. So we always run into the issue of silos at organizations. You know, marketing doesn't talk to operations, doesn't talk to production, and it's a problem. You know, they don't know what each other does. Well, this is not just silos. These are just different businesses. The people that are installing the windows are not the plumbers. So it's, you know, how do you think as one? And then I thought about our own issues, you know, the work done at our house, the carpenter's not thinking about the plumber and the plumber's not thinking about the painter. And then we're stuck with, wow, well, we can't even paint that anymore because now they constructed shingles over it. We can't even access it. Uh-huh. So I see the difficulty and the need for this, but the book is plain spoken. It is so thorough. It includes pictures, examples. He is a very generous author and it was great to hear him speak.
Yes. And he is very busy, by the way. He's always traveling all over the place because they're building things all over the world. And so it's definitely an industry that I still think, he even says it in our interview, that they're at that phase where they're past early adoption or innovation, but they're not quite into mainstream yet, even in the lean industry, even in the construction industry.
I believe it.
It's time to announce the coupon code.
This code is for 20% off any of our Lean Six Sigma training and certification courses. That's white belt, yellow belt, green belt, black belt, or lean training.
So if you've joined us at the Just in Time Cafe, just use the coupon code 20FRAPPE. That's 20FRAPPE during checkout. Make sure to use it soon since the coupon code will expire at the end of February.
Coming up next, it's today's special. Tracy, give us a little preview of your interview with David Umstadt.
I really enjoyed the interview with Dave. It was very interesting. We talked a lot about the things in his book, about some of the statistics in construction where there's danger, lack of safety, and what it means when you're not very efficient in a construction perspective. So from a construction perspective. So I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. And I think you're going to definitely want to hear this interview, and you're probably going to want to pick up his book, especially if you're in construction. I'd like to welcome our guest for today's special, Dave Umstadt. He is the author of a new book. It's called Lean Project Delivery, Building Championship Project Teams. Let me tell you a little bit about Dave. He is an internationally recognized authority in lean project delivery, program management, facilities management, and sustainability. He has seen the industry from 360 degrees as a design builder, facilities manager, executive,
owner and coach. And he brings a unique perspective on how lean can transform projects and organizations. He's also the principal of UMSTOT Project and Facility Solutions and an associate faculty member at San Diego State University. He has been coaching owners, developers, builders, designers, and specialty trade contractors in lean thinking, culture change, and continuous improvement as part of the company's core offerings. Welcome, Dave. How are you today?
Very well, Tracy. So thanks for having me.
Well, I'm very interested, and I think our audience might be interested too, in your specific industry and skill set. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about what is lean construction? What does that mean?
Okay. Well, lean construction is really all about how do we end up applying the Toyota production method and system into the way we design and deliver our capital projects throughout the country and throughout the world. And I will share that, you know, I embarked on my lean journey in 2007, and I was just really suffering from being a public owner where we were delivering all of our projects in a hard bid scenario, which for the audience out there means that this was a lowest responsible bidder was awarded the contract. And then the gloves came off and we started fighting over how we were going to get the project done and who was going to pay for what. Mm-hmm. And having suffered through a tremendous amount of time spent in mediation, time spent dealing with lawsuits and change orders, I think I just signed a total of 8,000 change orders over a period of 3 years, I came to the conclusion there has to be a better way. And so I was looking very hard at when I went to the San Diego Community College District in 2007. We were just starting a $1.6 billion program, and it was very early on. It's like we asked the question, what would you do if you could do this any way that you thought possible? And we looked out to what others were doing in the industry. We were inspired by people like Sutter Healthcare up in Northern California that were really trying to introduce lean and lean thinking and lean methodologies into the way that they designed and delivered their projects. And we tried to emulate that as close as we could, given the constraints of the public agency in California at the time. But basically, we were trying to deal with a pain point and kind of coming back to your original question, well, what is lean construction? Well, it's really about having a better outcome from an owner's perspective. And, number one, better understanding of what the customer values, and from that, being in a position to deliver that value. And as part of that process, really kind of learning as we go along how inefficient and how much waste there currently is in our industry. And I'm sure we're going to get deeper into that in the podcast as we go.
Yes. So as I had mentioned, Dave is an author, and he wrote this book called The Lean Project Delivery, and it talks a lot about lean projects and delivering what you call capital projects. And there's so many. I mean, anytime you're really building anything, this would really apply, construction of any kind. And so how much waste would you say is in construction and in the construction industry, Dave?
There is plenty to go around. So. This is kind of an interesting question, but let me answer it first, and then I'll kind of give some context. Depending upon the studies that you look at, the Construction Industry Institute did a study tied to labor productivity and waste in the industry. And so, granted, it was a small sample size, but conducted by the Colorado University of Boulder, so a pretty esteemed higher education institution. And what they did is they went out and looked at what actual value-added time did steel fabricators and erectors, as well as pipe fitters, have on a particular project? So they were really looking more towards an industrial process type of a project and looking hard at, okay, how much did they actually create value? How much was non-value-added required time for planning and other types of things? And how much was waste? And what they found is that it ranged. Not a big surprise, but basically 56% of the time was waste. When you compare that to manufacturing, it's remarkably higher. So just looking at the the unused manpower or labor productivity huge opportunity in the industry. And we as an industry have done a very poor job. If you look at productivity over the course of the last 50 years in the United States, construction productivity is the only industry that has actually declined over the 50 years, whereas the balance of the economy is improved by a factor of 2.5 times. We look at that based on information that McKinsey put together in a report about a year ago in 2017. That holds true across the North America, South America, and Europe. There are exceptions in Asia, but that's predominantly driven by China and some of the things that China is doing to advance productivity in the construction marketplace. So if we have declined in productivity in the past 50 years, costs continue to go up. What's the value proposition for the owner? It's a challenge. We can't continue to do what we've done and expect to be able to meet our needs.
Yes. So there's definitely a lot of waste in construction. And I bet a lot of people actually could cite evidence of that in some of the building projects that they might be following. But you also talk about in your book about construction's fatal four. And if we're talking about why lean and why it might be important in construction, this was pretty compelling when I was reading it in your book about the fatal four: falls, struck by objects, electrocutions, and caught in / between. And these fatal four are responsible for nearly 2/3 of the total deaths in construction. So how does lean help with safety?
Wow. Well, it's a great question. Okay. And, so just for context, for those out there listening to the podcast, in 2015, the last year, the data that we looked at, there were 937 fatalities in the United States in the construction industry. That's 937 too many. But back to the question on how does lean end up doing that? Well, lean requires proper planning. And the better one plans, the safer the environment. The better quality that gets generated, the better the environment. So if you don't have to rework, if you are staging materials and just-in-time delivery, then you are also in a situation where you are improving the safety environment. 5S, kind of crucial. I think as you probably read in the book, there's some great examples of poor 5S practices on job sites. And I can tell you from 30 years of experience going to construction job sites that if I run into a job site that has a lot of house cleaning or housekeeping issues, I almost guarantee you that they're quality issues. I almost guarantee you they're safety issues. And I almost guarantee you that the schedule is, the project is behind schedule. It's a very good indicator. And it's not a surprise for any of us lean practitioners that, 5S is a really good indicator of getting to normal conditions and then defining what's abnormal. You can't figure out what's going on if everything's is a mess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty easy to see when things are really not very well organized.
Yeah. And so there are ways to get around, to address that. So job sites where we see good lean practices, not only do you have proper planning, but the situation where material is on wheels, so it's easily relocated if it needs to be, and transported, creating a safer work environment from lifting, crushing, proper crane lifting scheduling, so materials coming in and out. So same types of things that you would see in a factory scenario is that the material comes to the site, does it arrive when it's expected to arrive? Are we prepared to handle it and put it to where it needs to be right now, or within the window that we've identified in order to do that? Those are all important planning pieces of it that as we start looking at the last planner system, which we haven't gotten to yet, but the last planner system is very much like a Kanban board. And for those that are out there, and it's very much pull production based. So if we need to have the material on the 12th floor in order to do some work, then okay, what needs to happen just before that and working our way back through the system.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what Last Planner is. Is this a very much, so it's a Kanban board, as you say, but tell us how it applies to the construction process.
Okay, well, it's a great tool. This was a tool that was developed by Glenn Ballard and Greg Howell back in the 90s, and Glenn Ballard did his PhD dissertation on this, which was published and accepted in 2000. But this is the genesis behind it. They were doing work in East Texas and Louisiana and their oil patch. So these are basically petrochemical industrial projects. And they were originally studying productivity. So kind of coming back to that productivity study I cited earlier, they were trying to assess, you know, how might we be able to improve productivity? So they worked with 400 superintendents and foremen from seven different companies and asked them a simple question. You know, first question was, what do you plan to get done this week? And at the end of the week, they would ask, what did you get done this week? And what do you think that the answer might have been, Tracy?
Not what we planned.
Not what we planned. That's right. So it ranged. Okay. So, you know, in fairness, it ranged from 30 to 70%. The average experience of the individuals that were participating was 20 plus years in the industry. So they knew what they were doing. And so 30 to 70% and with an average of 54% of the activities actually planned were completed as anticipated. So it's no wonder, you know, that from a construction industry perspective, if we're only hitting our target 54% of the time, there's tremendous variability. And with that, unreliability and unpredictability in the schedule, which is a real problem. So Glenn and Greg developed the last planner system, and it continues to evolve. But the idea is this. The last planners are those that will be doing the final planning of whoever is going to be doing work. So think line supervisor type of thing, so that all of the employees that are on that particular line are part of that crew. So that's who's planning the work and committing their crew. And we're having each of those crew leaders participate in a collaborative environment where they are making reliable commitments to one another with respect to the handoffs between their disciplines and trades. So that's kind of the last planner system in an overview. There are five components to it, but it's all about pull. So it's a full production planning system, highly visual. So think Kanban board where there's actually weekly boards. There is some digitizing to this at this point in time, but the tactile visual piece of it is key from what we've seen. So many construction people like to work with their hands and their tools, and so working with stickies works very well for them, or post-its or visual cues.
Mm-hmm. Very tactile, aligned with what they're doing every day.
Exactly.
So I also thought what was interesting in your book was you talk about the efficiency of the construction process, and you compared it to a lean practitioner looking at the construction process and non-practitioners. And there's a huge difference between what a lean practitioner says is inefficient. 62% of lean practitioners say the construction process is inefficient versus non-practitioners of 14%. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it was a pretty telling finding, if you will. This comes from a study which was done back in 2013 by McGraw-Hill in a Smart Market report. But they'd gone out to 425 or so industry practitioners. Some were members of the Lean Construction Institute. Some were members of the Associated General Contractors, one of the large contracting organizations here in the U.S., and asked them, you know, some questions, you know, tied to, have you ever heard of Lean? Do you know what Lean is? Have you applied it? Do you implement it? And what they found is they asked a whole series of questions, but this one was very compelling, and that those that had actually introduced Lean into the way that they deliver their projects, 66% in rough terms, almost two-thirds, thought our industry was highly inefficient or inefficient. And in contrast, you know, almost the exact opposite ratio for those that had never heard of Lean before, thought our industry, over 50% thought the industry was just highly efficient or efficient. And I will share that, you know, this is really kind of an education opportunity, because it's learning to see. So think about the Ono circle and going out to actually see for yourself and learning to see and taking the time to see. Unfortunately, our industry is very much caught up in firefighter mode. And even worse, we tend to reinforce those that firefight well with promotions and more responsibility. And what does that beget? That begets more firefighting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the challenges that we have as an industry is, number one, stopping long enough to learn to see the inefficiencies and the opportunities that come with that to improve our productivity. I know that when I first saw the productivity data for the construction industry, I'd been in the industry 20 years at that time and said, wow, that can't be true. Now, there are all kinds of rationalizations on, you know, why that's not right, or, you know, we're different, we're unique. And quite frankly, it's untrue, but that really becomes part of, you know, learning to see and then learning to understand and then accept. And so that becomes a very different scenario. And once you've done those three steps, you're now in a position where you can develop appropriate countermeasures and really be much more effective in addressing some of the root causes of why we see what we see.
Yes. So being in this industry for as long as you have, what would you say the maturity level is of lean in construction? Would you say that it's still in its infancy? Would you say that you're seeing a lot of more advanced strides by organizations? What are your thoughts on the maturity of lean?
We are, if we want to look at the adoption curve that you see for so many types of things, I think we're past the innovator stage. We're in the early adoption phase. So I think we're past infancy, but mm-hmm. we're still learning how to walk, and we're certainly not running yet. and there's tremendous opportunity. Now, to that end, there is a lot of interest in the Lean Construction Institute, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later. But what we have found is that as owners become more knowledgeable about lean and are increasingly frustrated with the outcomes of the traditional processes, more and more owners are demanding a different approach. And we actually see owners that are actually requiring respondents to opportunities for building to share with us your lean project delivery approach. How are you going to do that? How are you going to set up a collaborative environment? How are you going to use the last planner system so we have more highly reliable and predictable work plans? How are we going to assure that we're meeting the target value definition and aligning that with all of those on the customer user side? And that what's interesting in the construction industry is that typically there's a point of contact on the owner side, but the owner's point of contact has their own internal customers. And sometimes those internal customers' voices and concerns and value propositions are not well defined or clearly heard or clearly understood. And so there's a tremendous opportunity to really enhance that process. And if you have a better understanding of what the target is, you're much more likely to hit it and have the successful outcomes, right?
Yes. So you did mention the Lean Construction Institute. Can you tell us a little bit about what that institute is and your involvement in that?
Sure. Well, the Lean Construction Institute was founded about 20 years ago and by the Greg Howell and Glenn Ballard, the two gentlemen I was just talking about earlier. And it has grown quite a bit. I don't know what the current membership count is by organization or by individual, but it's come a long ways in the 10 years I've been involved. I've been involved since 2008 and basically had a leadership role in the San Diego community of practice for until just this year, where I was fortunate enough to find somebody that was a capable successor to take the reins and run with it. And I'm very happy to share that it continues on. But the idea between the Lean Construction Institute is basically transforming the industry, the way that we approach design and construction, and really trying to enhance that value proposition. There is a Congress which is held once a year, and the Congress has had increasing participation. I think there are expected about 2,000 in Orlando coming up later this month to learn about all kinds of case histories, their workshops in advance of the Congress so that people can actually learn how to apply, you know, various types of lean approaches or lean tools, lean thinking as the case may be, to lean design and construction. And so it's a maturing organization at this point in time. But as I said, we're still in the early adoption phase. I'd like to see at some point before I'm done working that, you know, that's just kind of the way the business is going to be done. That's my goal.
Yes, and I had the pleasure of attending the Lean Construction Institute's Community of Practice recently in San Diego. That's where I got to meet you in person. I'd heard about you all these years and hadn't had a chance to meet you. And how many people were there? I would say, was that around 200 people were there just for San Diego area?
I want to say we had about 120 or 130 in attendance.
Yeah.
So it was a good turnout, and a great program, as you saw. And we talked about everything from how do you apply prefabrication to urban infill housing, so that with the goal of reducing the cost of urban housing by half, which is a pretty amazing presentation. We had a virtual design and construction and lean integration presentation from Skanska. They came all the way from Oslo, Norway, to share some of the things they're doing in the Nordics, among other things. So some pretty exciting topics, and actually an excellent day, I thought, in my opinion, on the ways to share with the community.
I actually thought it was a great session as well. Very, very interesting and very compelling and dynamic speakers. So I was happy to attend.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah. So what are some of the benefits for those who have never implemented lean in construction? What would you say would be some of the reasons why they should? I know you talk about it in your book. There's a couple of benefits that you've listed and some of the other further reasons to consider lean.
Well, the better outcomes are what it's all about ultimately. But for instance, there was a study done in 2016 with a group of 81 owners throughout the United States, and they asked these owners to describe their best project. So what are the characteristics of the best project they ever had that they had to deliver, and then tell us about the characteristics of your typical projects. And what they found, and this comes back to your question, is that the best projects, the ones that had high lean intensity, were 3 times as likely to finish ahead of schedule and 2 times as likely to finish under budget as compared to typical projects. So that's a huge outcome, if you will. We talked about safety earlier. We talked about quality. If you're a design professional or a construction professional, if you have a more reliable, predictable production plan, you're going to be more profitable. So all of those things are good. Even if you're more profitable, think about this. If you can deliver the same thing for less, then you have put yourself into a competitive advantage position in the marketplace. So that's just the tip of the iceberg, but those are all compelling reasons in my mind.
Absolutely. Enough said on that. If somebody doesn't go ahead and implement lean after that, I don't know who they better think twice about a lot of things. So anything else you want to share about your book to our audience?
Well, it was inspired because there are a lot of tremendous lean references out there with respect to how's lean used in manufacturing? How is lean used in the service industry? How does lean leadership, and then all kinds of associated things tied to that. But the application of lean to design and construction has not been very well documented. There's been a lot of academic research, but there hadn't been a holistic guidebook, if you will, or playbook to this. And so that was what inspired us to really write this book, was to how can we translate these lean principles, which may be completely foreign to somebody in the construction industry, coming from manufacturing or the service sector, and make them applicable, and not only make them applicable, understand or explain them in terms that can be easily understood, and people can then make the linkage on, well, how does it, I get how that applies across from an automobile manufacturing perspective to, how we actually do our production planning for the way we're going to build this or construct this building.
Wonderful. Well, is it available on Amazon?
It is. And on demand, as it should be, so.
Wonderful. So just 2 last questions, and then we're going to be out of time. The first question is, where are you these days? What are your interests lately? Where are you spending your time?
Well, that's a great question. So the last 5 years, I've been teaching at the graduate level at San Diego State. Each spring, I teach the capstone course in their master's construction engineering and management program. Really using this as an opportunity to give back and to educate the next generation on lean and how it can be applied to design and construction. So I've been very happy doing that. And we've been working with teams literally all over the world. As we talked earlier on, stop counting at 100,000 miles in 2017. We were supporting a lot of work in Europe. We've done a lot of work in the data center field, a lot of higher education work, a lot of healthcare work, a lot of pharmaceutical work. We're currently doing a lot of work with airports. But it tends to be the more complex projects. Certainly, lean applies across the board to all construction projects. But the more complex the projects become, the greater the opportunity and the greater the risk, actually, of failure. And we didn't talk about mega project failures, but basically projects that are $750 million or greater in value have a two-thirds probability of failing in one of four major categories, either tied to budget, schedule, ultimate performance of the asset, or paying more than they should have paid for that particular market condition.
Well, that does sound risky. So I guess what we want to share with our audience is if you have a $750 million project or more expensive, you better call Dave Umstotz. Where would they find you, Dave? How did they get a hold of you?
Well, I'm based out of San Diego, but easy to get a hold of me, david.umstotz@umstotzsolutions.com, or you can go to our website, umstotzsolutions.com. Both of those are good ways to reach out and LinkedIn is another opportunity. So I post a lot of interesting things on lean as it relates to design and construction. So if you're interested in doing that, reach out on LinkedIn. I'd be glad to connect with you.
Sounds great, Dave. I want to thank you for joining me at the Just In Time Cafe today. I hope you enjoyed your coffee.
I did. So thank you, Tracy.
You definitely want to sign up for Tracy's webinar, How Leaders Build a Culture of Process Improvement. That's coming up when, Tracy?
Coming up on February 28th.
So sign up for that. We also want to take a second to tell you about a great Japan trip coming up this May 12th through the 18th. This one's sponsored by a lean coach, educator, and thought leader, Katie Anderson, also a friend. This trip is kind of fascinating. You get special time with Isao Yoshino. He was thought leader John Shook's first manager. He was also the role model for the Sanderson character in Mr. Shook's book, Managing to Learn. He's a 40-plus year Toyota leader who spent 14 years in the U.S. He's a key leader in developing and running the training program for NUMMI, that's acronym N-U-M-M-I, teaching American managers the Toyota production system in Japan. The focus isn't just on manufacturing, but more broadly with other industries and Japanese culture. So they focus on Toyota and its suppliers, connection and flow. They focus on education. They visit an elementary school. They also visit 5S Town, which is fascinating to me. I want to go to 5S Town.
Wow.
Of Ashikaja and the surrounding area. So the Japanese food that you would get when you were over there and all a lot of other cultural experiences, which sounds fantastic.
That sounds amazing. And I'm wondering, does Marie Kondo live in 5S Town?
I just thought of that because we're talking about Marie Kondo, which is coming up on another podcast, by the way.
Yes. So set your alarm to download our next episode where we interview Moshkan Amini. She's the Director of Process Management and Continuous Improvement of Information Technology Services at UC San Diego.
If we're part of your commute, thanks for stopping in at the Just In Time Cafe.
See you in 2 weeks.